91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Florida's Guardian Ad Litem program began in 1980. It helps abused, neglected, and abandoned children involved in court proceedings. The Guardians are concerned volunteers, not attorneys, who work to ensure a safe and permanent home for children. They make visits, gather information, recommend medical and psychological services, and appear in court. We'll also hear about Voices for Children of Broward County. The organization advocates for kids who wind up in the care of the state. That's in minutes. Later, it's Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining with wine columnist Fred Tasker. They'll visit the acclaimed South Beach chef Fabio Vivioni, author of Fabio's American Home Kitchen. That's Topical Currents today. First, NPR and Regional News. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Thursday afternoon. We begin this hour with information about abused, neglected, and abandoned children in Florida, especially in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. We'll hear from the recruiter of volunteers for the Guardian Ad Litem program of the 11th Judicial Circuit. He's Michael Brennan. Welcome to you, Michael. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And we also have the Executive Director of Voices for Children of Broward County, Erica Herman. Voices for Children helps train, educate, and support community volunteers for neglected and abandoned children. And it helps bridge funding gaps in state funding. Welcome to you, Erica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Michael, let's just begin to get an overview of the Florida Guardian Ad Litem program. Who are you and what you do?
So as Joe mentioned, my name is Michael Brennan. I'm a volunteer recruiter for the program. I recruit people who can step in and be the voice for children who've been abused, abandoned, or neglected by their guardian. They, in a sense, act as the voice, the eyes and ears of the court. They make recommendations to the judge concerning the child's social, physical, and emotional, educational, and legal status affairs.
What made you get into this?
Well, I have a background in nonprofit. I worked in New York City previously for an organization called iMentor that tried to bridge the mentoring gap for children. That was through AmeriCorps. I did that for a couple of years, and I wanted to continue that nonprofit work down here in Florida when I moved here 3 years ago.
Erica, how does Voices for Children, now there's one in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach, you said, correct?
Yes, correct.
And you're the executive director of the one in Broward.
Correct.
So how do you work with the, with Michael Brennan and the Florida Guardian Ad Litem program?
Yeah, so we are a unique collaboration between a nonprofit and a state entity. So we help fill the gaps when a child is in the dependency system or has an open and active court case. Voices for Children, both Miami, Broward, and Speak Up for Kids in Palm Beach come in and kind of help and ensure that the child's needs are met. So if they have life needs like backpacks or toiletries or a mattress, the Voices programs will come in and support that type of need for these kids.
I see. So your program, Michael, is more you actually find the volunteer guardians ad litem.
We look for the boots on the ground to really step in and be that support for the child directly, yeah.
I would think this is a particularly difficult time for children in this situation, the holidays. Is that the case?
It definitely can be. I mean, there's kids who are without a supportive family, and they see the holidays coming up, and their friends and family around them maybe getting gifts, and they're kind of left out. And if it's not for help with organizations like the Voices, the kids might not get to have a normal sense of a holiday.
Erica Herman, tell us more about how Voices helps to make up for gaps in state funding of GALP or Guardian Ad Litem.
Sure. So right now there's a lot of young people in the dependency system. In Broward, we see about a little over 2,800 kids that are right now that have an open and active court case. And so their needs vary. And through the guardians or the guardian ad litems, the actual volunteers, they're able to tell us what those direct needs are for the kids. So they come and tell Voices what those needs are, and we help support that child in whatever they may need. So we are our own nonprofit. We do our own fundraising to support those basic needs. The common needs that we see all the time are the toiletries, because these children are constantly moved from home to home, usually with nothing, as well as school supplies and school uniforms, because all that stuff has stayed behind.
Are some of them in institutions?
So foster care is kind of this big umbrella, and there's these little raindrops under it. And their first raindrop is relative care, so that's with grandma or grandpa. Then there's non-relative caregiving. Then there's foster care, and then group home. Majority of the kids that we serve in Broward, about 80% of them are in relative and non-relative caregiving, and they don't get the same support that they would if they were in a group or a foster home. So we focus a lot of our efforts on ensuring that the grandparents or the neighbor or the aunt are getting those resources that they need.
It seems counterintuitive that they'd get less support.
Right. Absolutely. It absolutely does do that, you know. They're doing something out of the goodness of their heart, and they're not getting what they actually need from the state to support, take care of those kids.
Michael, who are these guardians, and how does one become one, and can it be from any walk of life? They're not attorneys, is that correct?
It can definitely be from any walk of life. Some guardians do take on pro bono cases. Some guardians are attorneys. That's generally not the wide array of volunteers that we have. We have retirees, we have educators, we have parents who have empty nests. Their children have gone away to college and they want to continue to serve in the community. Mm-hmm. You have college students too, who might be about to leave the college they're at, and they're looking for something to bolster their resume. So those are some of the people we have. You don't have to have an extensive education to be a volunteer.
Give some examples of where guardian ad litems have made a big difference in a kid.
So I have a few examples of cases. One that really stood out was that there was a case where a dad was reported to be neglecting his children. He had three children, and he was told he didn't have a job. Well, it turned out he did have a job. It was reported he didn't have a place to live. He did. He was in a temporary living facility, and he even had a place for his kids. The therapist looked at this father that they worked with, and we found out sometimes the therapist wasn't always redirecting the dad on how to really voice concerns. And it turned out this dad was mentally retarded. So not only did you have all that going on, but you had a parent who was being kind of kicked aside by the supporting agency that he could have been working with. So what ended up happening...
What do you mean?
Well, he wasn't given the right chance that he really should have been. He was just being kind of...
Kicked aside by whom, though?
By the supporting agency, by the social work agency that was working with the family.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
So what was recommended is there were parenting classes given to the parent. There was therapy given around for the children, and there were wraparound services for the dad to support the family. It ended up happening that the family all did reunify. The kids at the time were in foster care, and they were aged 6 to 9, and now they're living in Ohio. So it's a case where you do see that sometimes the family can reunite and come back together, even though there's been a lot of struggles in the beginning. But it's because of the Guardian Ad Litem program and our volunteers that voiced for this family that they're able to see that maybe there was something more to what was being painted at first in the picture.
Yeah, the Guardian Ad Litem volunteers are the only voice that has no stake in the case. So they are the impartial voice and acting really on the best interest of that child. And that's, I think, kind of what you were trying to showcase.
Yeah.
So you're saying college students, too, can be guardians ad litem?
Definitely.
So anybody can actually, what is the age requirement?
The age requirement generally is 21. There are some individuals who are 19 who take on cases, but they have to team up with somebody who is 21 or older to mm-hmm. do it, because you make visitations to the child's home. And it was only in recent years that we allowed people younger than 21, 19 in this case, to take on cases, but they need a support, they need a mentor and another gal to go with them in these cases.
You mean somebody over 21?
Right, and they would be a gal as well, a guardian ad litem volunteer.
Oh, a gal. That's right.
That's what we tend to call it.
Yes, yes. If you'd like to join in the conversation, we're talking about Florida Guardian Ad Litem Program, as well as Voices for Children of Broward County. But there is a Voices in Miami-Dade County and Speak Out for Children.
Speak Up.
Speak Up for Children in Palm Beach County. Our number, 1-800, 743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Or you can email radio@WLRN.org. So let me just see how this works. You know, how does a child get into your, how does a child get land at your door?
So generally, there's been a reported case of abuse, abandonment, or neglect. The Department of Children and Families goes and reports that claim. They verify it. Then the child is either removed from the home or a parent is told to remove themselves from the home because they're a threat to the child. So then the Guardian Ad Litem program comes and steps in on the case because they every child who's in the dependency system that fits this requirement gets to have a Guardian Ad Litem volunteer.
So the court is who orders a Guardian Ad Litem?
The juvenile court, yes.
Okay.
Does GALP very often make a real difference in rulings by the judges?
It can have a really profound difference in the child's life. Sometimes children have benefited from maybe getting tutoring services or from counseling services that they may not have had before because there wasn't someone speaking up. There wasn't a volunteer who was acting.
But how about something as, say, as important as custody changes? Or has that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think having an impartial voice, their only interest is in the child. So they're going to redirect whatever is in the best interest for the child. So if the child's placed in an unsafe home, that guardian has the power to express that in the court and express what the best interest of that child. So we've had cases where placement has been changed based on the guardian's opinion and has been able to get the kid something. We recently had a case with a child who had a neurological disorder and needed specialized glasses, and the court had ordered our community-based care organization to get them, and they weren't fulfilled, and so the guardian went back to the court and asked the judge to allow Voices to step in and provide for those glasses, and so we were able to immediately get that child glasses.
I just lost my train of thought. No. It was about what you were talking about.
Well, we could take a break.
We could take a break now, and then maybe I'll think of it.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Topical Currents Thursday edition. We're speaking with Michael Brennan. He's the volunteer recruiter for Florida Guardian Ad Litem Program. And Erica Herman is the executive director of Voices for Children of Broward County. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. And I did think about, because you were talking, Erica, about what these guardians actually do. And they're doing some important and can be life-changing things. What does their training entail?
Yeah, so each month, the Broward Circuit does a 30-hour training, and the volunteers come in and learn everything about case management, to the process of removal, to how to connect with the child, to domestic violence issues, to cultural diversity, all getting them prepared to go work on a case. After they finish the training, they go through a background check and they go do a court observation. And then they get assigned a case, and they have a veteran guardian ad litem with them that supports them on their first case. And that first case kind of takes off, and they're with the child. They visit the child at least one time a month. They do reports. They meet with the schools. They meet with the doctors. They meet with their caregivers and report back to the court, and they attend the court hearings and really, really act as the person speaking for the child in these court hearings.
Do they ever have to meet with the parents?
At times, depending on the circumstances of each case, the parent might be involved.
So that could be a little uncomfortable, I would think,
at times. Could be interesting. I mean, one of the most important things that we try to educate the guardians on is non-judgmental open-minded, because you might find things that you're not expecting to see.
Right.
You're the gatherer. You're there to gather as much information as possible about the case.
And let's take some phone calls. We've got Aileen in Miami. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment on the Guardian program. About, I want to say, 7-8 years ago when I was in college, a group of recruiters came over to a club of ours, and they were asking for guardians. And I just remembered, I grew up as a pretty sheltered, and I just remembered hearing about what they were saying, thinking, what? I can't believe this stuff exists. I was so interested. And so, long story short, I volunteered, I signed up, I became a guardian, and I would say right now, 7-8 years later, I'm still a social worker because of the Guardian Ad Litem program. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done, but the best thing I've ever done. So I just wanted to encourage anyone who's interested to find out more. If you want to do something for your community, et cetera, become a volunteer. It's extremely rewarding, and I've never regretted it.
Mm. Thanks so much for your call. Thank you. Why don't you give out your contact information for those who do want to become guardians ad litem?
You can reach me directly at 786-469-3785. That's my direct extension. Or you can email me, michael.brennan, B-R-E-N-N-A-N, at gal.fl.gov.
But there's a... If they just go to
weareguardians.org, they can also find out more information about the general program.
Weareguardians.org. And Erica?
And in Broward, you can go to voicesbroward.org, or you can email at info@voicesbroward.org, or the number to call is 954-831-5952.
Are your volunteers predominantly younger or older?
They're mixed.
It's
they're
a mixed bag, it really is. Mm-hmm.
We have an emailer, Andrew. As a guardian ad litem volunteer in both Dayton, now Broward, what I'm always wondering is why both the GAL and the judge cannot be privy to what vacancies are available in the foster system. If a child needs to be pulled from a home due to allegations of abuse and DCF is very slow to respond, my assumption had been that it's difficult to find a vacancy or that available foster homes may be undesirable for a particular situation. There's no way for the GAL to know, however. Also, the available home should be ranked, perhaps a grading system for the environment and the reputation of the home and the caregivers. And the guardians could know when and if a child is placed in an A-graded home, for example, or a C- or D-graded home, perhaps could be on a waiting list for better replacements. Erica, did you want to say something?
Sure. That's a great comment and question. It's a community-wide concern and issue, and all the community partners are working together to kind of solve that and making sure that these children are placed in the best and safe environment as possible. It's not always so easy to have that type of thing immediately,
right.
And it takes time to flesh that stuff out.
And we'll continue on with some calls. David in Miami. David, you're up. Hi.
Oh, hi. I have a question. You have a guardian ad litem appointed, and what I'm hearing, their job is really just to gather information. Sometimes if you find out they're not fulfilling their obligations or they're unavailable, or you find out they're very biased against certain things. What's someone's recourse with that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, David,
Michael,
if I can respond to that, many of the volunteers do have to file reports to not only the program, but to the courts. And if they are showing signs where they do have a bias or they're not fulfilling the obligations that are being asked of them within the program, we can ask that they no longer be assigned to the case because we think they're not really putting in their true effort into the case.
Or can your can the leadership of GAL just pull them?
They can.
Okay.
Can a parent make that complaint?
The parent can make a complaint, but I'm not sure what the total effect that the complaint would have.
Okay, and we'll move along. I've got Charles in Tamarack. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. I'm Chuck Davidson, and I'm a guardian ad litem, and it will be 19 years in March. And I would just like to say when a mother complains about the guardian ad litem in court, it's been my experience, because this has happened many times, the judge will look at her or him and say, Mrs. Blah Blah, the guardian ad litem is the only one that cares about your child. This happens because we are advocates, we are investigators, and we work very hard for each of our children.
Chuck, thank you. You are so fabulous, and we are so blessed to have Chuck as one of
tell
our
us,
gals.
Tell us, in general, of course, Charles, a current case of yours. Of course, not using any names. Or
anything. I'm not, and I don't want to because they're active cases.
Okay.
But I've had a treasure trove of experiences of all kinds with children. I've gone to homes where I have foster homes where I have seen children, and I saw the deplorable conditions. And I've reported it. The children have been moved. Over the past several years, I've noticed the quality of the foster parents has increased. We have some truly loving, caring foster parents who worry about their children just as much as they would have worried about their own.
Chuck, what made you want to be a guardian ad litem, or what inspired you to want to be one?
I don't know. My wife was very supportive of it. 19 years ago, I heard an ad on the radio on an FM station, and I looked into it, and I found a home. I have my own business. I'm retired now, and I dedicate a lot of time to these children, and it is extraordinarily rewarding. One of the most interesting things I have found is when you're sitting in court, and I've heard, well, the judges listen to you. Yes, they do. Judge goes around the table, and then he says, what does a guardian ad litem have to say? And you say what you think and you feel and what's going on, and the judges always, almost, I cannot think of a time, unless it was against the law, that they did not agree with you and somehow write the orders that this child got exactly what you needed for this child. We truly are the eyes and the ears of the court.
Thank you, Chuck, for your service.
Okay, we're getting short on time. How about first contact information and also any upcoming events?
Okay, Michael.
Sure. So tomorrow is actually a National Adoption Day, and here in Miami at the Miami Children's Museum, there's going to be adoption ceremonies going on, and I'm going to be there staffing the event. And so if anybody wants to come by and look for me, they're welcome to. Down in April, we're going to have a third annual Guardian Ad Litem Child Awareness Picnic on Sunday, April 12th. That's going to be at AD Barnes Park from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. You're welcome to attend.
Okay, that's a ways off. And Erica?
And so we're right now in our Thanksgiving Day gift card drive so that we can help support these families for Thanksgiving. We also on Tuesday are participating in the Festival of Trees with a partner organization called Handy. And on December 28th, we are partnering with the Dolphins for the Dolphins' first Jets game.
And the info on if you want to become a volunteer
will be at weareguardians.org.
Weareguardians.org. We'll have a link to that on our website.
And voicesbroward.org.
Okay. And I wanted to ask how you're both funded. Erica, I know that you said that you fill the gap, but how are you funded?
So we're mainly funded by individuals, corporations, foundations, and special events.
And the Guardian Ad Litem program that I'm affiliated with is directly funded through the state.
Okay. Completely?
Completely.
And that's a consistent amount of funding?
To my understanding, yeah.
All right. Well, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Michael Brennan is a volunteer recruiter for Florida Guardian Ad Litem Program. Weareguardians.org is that website, should you be interested in volunteering. And Erica Herman is the executive director of Voices for Children of Broward County. That's voicesbroward.org. And you're all volunteers, correct?
Most of the people who work on staff, yes, they do take on cases. I will be taking on the case in the future myself.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for being with us,
okay,
and best
good
for
luck.
The holidays.
Food and Dining is next. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper here along with Bonnie Berman. Well, chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gastenheimer joins us now. She's famous for her many food and health-related books, as well as hundreds of her Dinner in Minutes quick meals, and of course, her syndicated column. She'll be participating in the book fair, I'm sure. Yes. Bonnie and I have had the pleasure of doing a demonstration with you down there. That was a lot of fun.
This Sunday, 3 o'clock, Building 8, come and see me.
Okay, maybe Bonnie and I will come down there, too.
You have to behave yourself.
Last time we were with you, we made a chocolate mousse.
Okay.
We were whipping egg whites and all that jazz.
Wow.
So what's on the menu today?
Today on the menu, American food. So I'm thinking maybe mac and cheese with an Italian touch. Or Joe, you're
American
from
American food, but we've got...
Fabio here. Well, listen to this. Joe, you're from St. Louis, where fried ravioli is a signature dish. Yes?
Yeah, they call it toasted ravioli.
Toasted,
usually.
Okay. So how about an Italian-style fried toasted ravioli?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Chef Fabio Viviani. Very Italian, Chef Fabio Viviani is with us. He lives in the States. He's Italian, but he lives in the States, and he loves American food. And it gives him an Italian touch because his new book is called Fabio's American Home Kitchen. And also, he's just opened a new restaurant on South Beach, Siena Tavern. It's where the old China Grill used to be.
He kind of looks South Beach a little bit.
You think he looks it? No, he's quite adorable, okay. Wouldn't you say?
So what is the old China Grill? 5th Street and...
It's at 404 Washington. It's right at the corner between 5th and Washington.
5th and Washington.
It's the big building with the light tower.
Yeah.
You can hear he's Italian, huh?
Oh, I think so.
Just a little bit. Come on.
Well, we'd love to hear from your listeners. Do you have... your own special touch on American classics, or do you just want to ask Fabio some questions? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email is radio@WLRN.org.
And, of course, always with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine suggestions from my Dinner in Minutes column that's in today's Miami Herald. And you can also read his wine column that is now in the Saturday food section of the Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I thought I would talk about wine for my favorite holiday, which is Thanksgiving.
Oh, sounds good to me.
Fred, you're in northern Michigan. How is it up there?
Oh, we got a foot of snow. We're going to have a white Thanksgiving, let alone a white Christmas up
now,
here.
Do you have the long underwear on while we talk?
Absolutely. It scratches a little bit or it itches a little bit, but I sure need it.
Only a foot. Okay, Fabio, your book. It's Fabio's American Kitchen. But first of all, where do we begin? You've given a new name to serial entrepreneur. Get this. You have nine restaurants, three coming on, three more coming on. You have your own magazine, your cookbooks. You are a star on Bravo's Top Chef. You have a line of products at Bed Bath & Beyond. And I understand, I'm out of breath already, that you're launching a line of wines.
Well, we're trying to stay busy, you know. We're this is not the country where I was born in.
And we just met his soon-to-be bride. What a catch she got.
Yeah, she got a great catch. You're right. No, I'm just kidding, honey.
She's sitting in the studio here.
Okay. She make me look really good. But, you know, back to what were you saying, you know, we're just trying to stay busy. We're very focused people, and we have a great group, and the group together has some great mind, and they bring good things onto the board.
Fabio, what kind of wine are you going to be purveying, Italian or American?
Well,
or?
You know, Italian would be an easy pick for me, but it would be a harder story to tell in America because, you know, as you know probably, America is not too comfortable yet with kind of Italian straightforward wine. So we decided to go with California to begin with. And then when the brand is on the market and people know about it, we will integrate some Italian varietal to it. We started with a Cabernet Sauvignon, but we did a kind of a more like a lady-friendly Cabernet. We did strip some of the oakiness to it, and we did cut through
some of
the panels.
I'm glad you defined what lady-friendly was.
What does that mean? It's not as bold? It's not as
It's not too
strong?
Heavy. It's not too hot from an alcohol standpoint, and is more like versatile for food. And when I say that, don't get me wrong. You know, my wife likes really bold wine, but that's not the generic rule applying to women drinking wine. They like.
I think Linda could drink us all under the table, even with that tannic wine.
True to that.
That's because Fred always calls me a lightweight. Let's go back to Joe's fried ravioli from the book. You call it that your Missouri style fried ravioli, the holy grail of comfort food. Why is that?
First of all, it's fresh pasta. So fresh pasta is the super comfort food in Italy. Then it's fried. So America loved fried, and fried food is associated most often with comfort food.
There's egg wash on it first.
Yeah, there is a little egg wash, a little breadcrumb, and that's fried. So fresh pasta, comfort food. Fried foods, comfort food. And then it's served family style with a little bit of tomato sauce. And my Italian tweak to it is a little shaving of grana padano on top. So for me, it's like, you know, it's original Missouri ravioli because I had him there for the first time fried because he clearly needed.
So you were on the hill.
I was on the countryside. Yes. I wasn't quite downtown there. Okay. And we had this wonderful recipe and they said that would do so well with some tomato sauce. I had a great recipe. I did my own twist.
Joe's frowning on that.
No.
No, it's okay.
No.
Sure.
I want to know what's put on top that made it Italian.
But with little grana padano cheese on top and some marinara sauce.
Oh, okay.
Guys, America puts cheese on my seafood linguine, so let me put some tomato sauce on your fried ravioli, okay?
Okay. Well, let's talk about the food we've got here in the studio.
Sure.
Because everyone's walking by saying, oh, my God, smells so good. What is it?
We got some meatball.
Not just some. He brought six for each person.
Well, how much you want to eat? Less than that?
It
we're trying to get like a bikini contest here.
Are you your Italian grandmother?
Right, of course. Come on. So what we did some Kobe beef meatball. We kind of mixed them with a little bit of ricotta cheese, keep them moist and the juice inside.
They're so light and flavorful. Yep. And I mean, you could eat six of them because they're only about the size of a golf ball. They're
you
not
should
enormous.
Eat six of those. No, you could. You should.
And what about the ricotta?
You know, it keeps them moist. You know, many people add milk and bread to their meatball to keep them moist, but most people don't understand that milk and water evaporates through the cooking process. So why you put it there if it goes away while you're cooking it anyway? If you put ricotta, it's something creamy, something moist, in a solid form, stays there and keeps the meat from drying out.
So in your book, Fabio's American Kitchen,
yes,
you have things like mac and cheese.
Yes.
And so why did you decide, as a very Italian, to write about American food?
I have done many cookbooks. This is my 10th, I think, or 11th, maybe. So the reality is that there is just so much Italian food you can do, unless you don't want to fall into the spinning and taking one ingredient off of a recipe you already done and add somebody else for the sake of it. But the reality is that I have been celebrating my 10th anniversary in this country. And last year, I've traveled all over America over 300 days. So I've seen a lot of American food. I love it, you know. And although American is not what I do, you know, it's not what I was wired to do, is what I'm finding myself to do most of the days. Is an American spin to Italian dishes I love. So I said, why not to do the opposite, an Italian spin on American dishes?
Fabio, what's your position on the great American hot dog?
I love hot dog, man. You know, I don't like baseball, I gotta say that, but when I go to the Dodger Stadium, the Dodger dog, it's a foot and a half, you gotta have it. And you walk around in New York, you gotta have a dog.
What do you serve at the Siena Tavern?
Siena Tavern, we do Italian-inspired food. We do rustic food with a modern component. You know, it's comfort food there as well. Everything is made from scratch. And what we do, we try to fuse Italian with the Miami scene. Mm. So everything is local,
and
a lot of fish.
When he serves this meatball as an appetizer, I've been there at the restaurant, at
Siena
Tavern.
Six of them?
No. It's huge. It's about the size of your head.
It's a 14-ounce meatball. Kobe beef, which is delightful.
I could easily eat the whole thing because it is light and wonderful, but it is a huge.
We go back there. You should, not could. You should.
Yes, yeah, so we go back to the shit.
Yeah, and that's an appetizer.
Yeah.
You have something else at the restaurant that I have never seen, and you said it's a very unusual Italian dish. And how do you say
coccoli?
Coccoli.
It's very common in Italy, actually. It's a light bread. It's kind of what a beignet, a pat choux would be, but it's puffed in olive oil.
Did you say like a beignet?
No,
like
it's not like a beignet. It's like...
the dough.
Because it's hollow.
It is hollow, but that's why. We add to the beignet kind of... to the dough, we add yeast. So it raises, and when it touches, the oil puffs. So instead of be kind of heavier like a beignet, it's the same dough, just puffed, so it's hollow inside. We cut it in half, put some prosciutto, and we add a little bit of stracchino cheese to it.
It's like a popover. It's what I would call a popover. Okay. But the thing is that it serves on the platter with prosciutto and with the cheese, but the cheese has truffle honey on it.
Yeah, we put a little truffle honey.
Oh, my God, it is so good. Another appetizer you could have there. And then one more thing at the restaurant that I loved was the dessert. And how do I say it? Bombolini?
The bomboloni.
Bomboloni.
It's a short, long story short, it's where donuts wants to be when it dies and go to heaven.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but tell them what it wants to be, because it's made with unusual
ingredients. It's kind of a donut. Instead of using eggs and lard, we're using mashed potato to do so. Mashed potato, egg yolk, tado flour, and then we put them in oil, fry them, they puff.
Cauliflower.
Mashed potato, a touch of flour.
Flour.
Oh, yeah, flour. and then we just dip, fry them in oil, and we coat them in sugar.
Mm. Wait, no, that's not the finish. There's three sauces that come with it. And it's really interesting because they come in little tubes. So
it's a squeeze bottle.
So instead of dipping.
You poke them and you fill them.
It's like a jelly donut filled with raspberry sauce. Is the raspberry sauce made with vodka?
No, it's a berry sauce. We have Nutella and we have salted whiskey caramel.
There you go, Fred.
Very good.
Okay,
sounds good to me.
Can we line one? Just a quick call. Hi, Leonard. You're on the air. Leonard in Hallandale.
Yeah, this is Leonard in Hallandale. In the old days, most all the quality restaurants had heat lamps, to keep the food warm till the servers picked them up. And I notice on the Food Channel and other places that show the back rooms in restaurants and so on, I don't see them much anymore, if any. Well, what's the reason?
The reason is that they're not very practical. Now we're using heating element that keeps the food warm from the bottom and from the top. It's just a matter of switching the technology to heat the food and keep it warm, but same principle, different equipment.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to have to go for a break now.
Very good.
We'll take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer talking with celebrity chef Fabio Viviani. We'll take a short break here and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Chef Fabio Viviani, and he's going to be at the Miami Book Fair this weekend. He's going to be there on Saturday at 11 o'clock, and he's going to be there on Sunday at 2 p.m. He's going to be cooking up a storm at the Miami Culinary Institute. Now, to get the exact times and where it's going to be, go to MiamiBookFairInternational.com. And as Joe mentioned earlier, I'm going to be at the book fair on Sunday as well. I'm going to be talking about how to manage diabetes with diet and exercise. My latest books, Simply Smoothies.
So you won't be making the chocolate mousse this time.
Well, Simply Smoothies. I'm going to tell you something. That's Simply Smoothies for Diabetes.
Oh, yeah, we had that program about it.
Right, and I had No Fuss Diabetes Desserts just came out, and there is a chocolate mousse in it, Fred. There you go, Joe Cooper. Come see me November 23rd, 3 p.m., Building 8. And now it's dinner and minutes time. And so Thanksgiving is nearly here, so it's not too early maybe to talk about turkey leftovers or just to enjoy it at any time. Today's dinner is a turkey cranberry hash. It's a quick meal for this busy time of year, and you don't have to wait for your turkey leftovers. You could use any kind of leftover meat in this dish, and it tastes great the second day, and it freezes well. So you sauté some cooked potatoes, and if you don't have any cooked potatoes, cook them in a microwave first. Onion, garlic for a few minutes. And then you add the turkey into a bowl, and Let me go. Oh, here you are. We're going to put the turkey in the bowl, put a little bit of cranberry sauce on it, put the vegetables, potatoes, and that, and you cook it up. I put some cheese on it and just cook it till the cheese melts. And that's a quick and easy turkey hash. And then you can see that recipe and a photo. It's at my website, dinnerinminutes.com, my new website that just went up. And another turkey recipe. It's in today's Miami Herald. It's Southwestern Turkey Pizza. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. And Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, as I said, Thanksgiving is always my favorite holiday. And the reason is that you don't have to send out greeting cards or buy presents. You're not expected in church or synagogue. It's permissible. In fact, it's even expected that you will stuff yourself silly, drink too much wine, doze through the football game, then wake up and stuff yourself again with a 3-pound sandwich made of 4 or 5 different kinds of appetizers. I mean, what more can you ask? In my family, my main duty is to choose the wine for Thanksgiving dinner. So I ask myself, self, what kind of wine goes with turkey, mashed potatoes, gravy, candied yam, cranberries, pumpkin and pecan pie, and that green bean casserole with the French fried onions on top? Now that's a tall order. In fact, I think it's impossible, so I believe that it takes me off the hook. I figure that any wine I serve will be right part of the time and wrong part of the time. So here's what I do. First, I hand each guest a glass of bubbly as they walk in the door to make them feel welcome. Now, I might be hosting 30 people, so I don't serve anything expensive. A good, reliable Spanish cava sparkling wine or a trendy Italian Prosecco will do fine, and they also go well with appetizers. Now, when the main course comes, I give everybody 2 glasses, and I pour each of them a red wine and a white wine. It's a hearty meal, so I go for the red wine. I like a hearty red wine, like Zinfandel or Shiraz or Merlot. And for the white, I like a big, rich, fat California Chardonnay. And then the best part for Linda is when dessert comes.
Thank you, Fred.
And that super sweet pumpkin or pecan pie, I like to serve a sweet dessert wine. For a white wine, I might pour a late harvest Sauvignon Blanc or maybe even a super sweet ice wine or a sweet and bubbly Asti Spumante. They can be very nice. If I want a red dessert wine, I like a sweet sparkling red Italian wine called Rosa Regali. It's made by Bonfi.
That's a delicious one. I really like that one.
Yeah, it really is nice. These dessert wines often come in half bottles, and this is good because I tend to find that most Thanksgiving dinner don't want a dessert wine. They don't know what they are, and they're just not comfortable with them. And I think, and a lot of people think it's uncool to drink sweet wine, which is just not true at all. Boy, are they missing a bet. In fact, sometimes I skip the dessert and just have the dessert wine.
What a surprise.
And that's another reason why I love Thanksgiving.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much. Viviani.
Yes.
They don't have a Thanksgiving in Italy.
Well, we don't have Thanksgiving in the meaning that you guys have. We celebrate the kind of autumn and the cold season right at the early of December. But we don't have a Thanksgiving kind of in the function that you guys celebrate Thanksgiving. No, I never had it till I moved to the United States. And the first 2 year, I was trying to understand why people get like 2-3 days off over the weekend and just get together, eat a lot. And I was like, that's what we do for Christmas, you know?
Right.
And then you guys do it again for Christmas. So there is more reason to celebrate in America and be thankful than there is in Italy.
Well, have you now been here for a while? Do you do anything? Do you make a turkey? Do you do anything like
yes,
that?
Yes, you know, I find turkey be just a big chicken. So whatever I do with chicken, I do with turkey. I don't do stuffing necessarily. I like to keep my bird nice and moist and serve side with it, you know, green and some mashed potatoes, some sweet potatoes. But I'm not quite there in the old marshmallow
sweet potato.
Like jelly. I'm not quite there. I need another 10 years for that.
Would I find turkey on the menu and in the average Italian restaurant?
No, sir. You wouldn't find turkey in the average Italian sandwich. Turkey is a happy bird in Italy. Nobody bothers him. honestly,
lucky Italian birds.
No, yeah, it's a lucky Italian birds.
So, well, you said you like your turkey juicy like a chicken.
Yeah.
So give us some tips on how
it's
we can make
tip.
Ours juicy.
The problem that America has is that they believe too much what they hear from recipes and advertisements. Turkey, the safe temperature is what, 165 degrees, right? To make sure that your turkey is fully cooked.
170 in the thighs.
Yeah. Right, but the problem is that carryover cooking. If you take your oven, if your turkey out of the oven when it's 165, by the time you serve it, the temperature will be well over 185. Because carryover cooking kind of increased the temperature in the core of the turkey. So to serve it at 165, 170, you have to take it out from the oven when it's 150. And that's what America does.
And you rest
like.
About 20 minutes?
And you rest at about 20, 30 minutes. So by the time you eat it, the inside temperature is perfect. Because from the hot juices from the outside, they will just pull back in for reverse osmosis.
All right. And do you just roast it in the oven with a lot of juice on the bottom? Or
no, I don't bust it. I don't bust
it.
I don't fork it. I don't poke it with a syringe. No.
No foil.
Just put it in the oven, touch of olive oil, salt and pepper, 150, take it out, leave it alone. You're welcome. That's it.
And how long do you keep it in?
Well, it depends how big it is.
Well, let's say
it's a 12-pound turkey, maybe 2 hours, hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours. That doesn't take... when I hear people, they cook turkey for 4 or 5 hours, I'm like, that's dreadful. Seriously, I'd rather not eat it than cook something for that long.
On that note, Fabio Viviani, it's been a really delicious, tasty week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and for the very delicious meatball.
Thank
Kobe
you very
meatballs.
Much. Thank you, guys.
His book is Fabio's American Kitchen. It's really a delightful read, just as delightful as he is. And his new restaurant is Siena Tavern. It's at 5th and Washington on South Beach. It's a really beautiful spot. It's got a really nice outdoor eating area. He's going to be at the Miami Book Fair International November 22nd, 11 a.m., and November 23rd, 2 p.m., where he's going to be cooking. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Fun eating with you today.
Thank you. Thanks, Linda. Maybe we'll see you Sunday.
Maybe Sunday. Yes, come and join me at, where am I going to be? 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Okay.
I'm wishing everybody a wonderful, wonderful, tasty, happy Thanksgiving. I'll be back in 2 weeks with the grand winner of the Pillsbury Bake Off. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's program. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, Bonnie and I return with journalist Adam Tanner. He's written a fascinating book called What Stays in Vegas? The World of Personal Data, Lifeblood of Big Business, and the End of Privacy as We Know It. Shall we have a calendar, Bonnie?
Oh, of course we shall.
On this day, 1925, 89 years ago, the birth of Robert Kennedy in Brookline, Massachusetts. A Navy vet, he earned a law degree at the University of Virginia. After pursuing organized crime before Congress, he held great power as Attorney General and, of course, then Senator. And on this day, 1929, 85 years ago, the birth of America's oldest teenager, the late Dick Clark in Mount Vernon, New York. The first national broadcast of American Bandstand was in 1957. One more while we head to Camp Granada. On this day in 1973, 41 years ago, the death of musician, satirist Alan Sherman. He created I've Got a Secret. The novelty tune Hello Mudda, Hello Fada reached Billboard's number 2 in 1963. You can find free audio archives of TC on our website, WLRN.org. More information and links as well on the Topical Currents Facebook page. Pictures of Linda, Bonnie, Fred,
and you.
And alas, me. A picture of Fabio is on there also. So we leave with a parody from Alan Sherman. Linda, you'll like this. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up tall, there's a land where they've never heard of cholesterol. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Next, Here and Now from NPR News.